Ya comienza en AM1240. Las cartas sobre la mesa. Juegos de mesa y cultura lúdica. Porque jugar es para todos. Las cartas sobre la mesa. Un programa para un número ilimitado de jugadores de 0 a 99 años. Hasta las 17 en Radio Universidad.
Bienvenidos y bienvenidas una vez más a Las Cartas sobre la Mesa, episodio 61. Esta es una pequeña introducción antes de empezar con el capítulo para contarles que este capítulo va a ser grabado en inglés. Sí, disculpen a aquellos que no hablan inglés. Le hicimos una entrevista a Jordi Adam, el diseñador de Cartographers, y bueno, desafortunadamente solo la pudimos hacer en inglés, pero creemos que igual tiene un montón de valor para Las Cartas sobre la Mesa. No llegamos a subir el video con los subtítulos todavía, así que seguramente durante el verano de Argentina vamos a subir el video con subtítulos en español y todo hermoso. Pero bueno, discúlpenos por ahora y prepárense porque el capítulo va a ser en inglés y es un capitulazo. Abrazo.
Welcome and welcome to Las Cartas sobre la Mesa. My name is Matías Paredes, and speaking English is getting harder and harder with each year. I'm here with two people today. We promised an interview and we got an interview with a great designer. But first, the formalities. I'm here with Juan Agustín Maiolino, and he will say hi.
Hello. I thought when you were saying that I'm here with a great designer, I thought you were talking about me.
No.
With the person that we have here today with us, I'm definitely not the best designer here.
No, it's me. It's definitely me.
Yeah.
The person we have today is Jordi Adams. Is your name Jordi? Is it pronounced Jordi?
At the moment I accept anything. people always. Yeah, Jordi.
Jordi. Okay.
But, yeah.
We are here with Jorge.
This Jordi... week I've been called probably like three different names. Jorgir and Jorgir.
Okay, then sorry if we mispronounce your name. Jordi is an amazing designer from Brazil. He will say later where does he come from exactly, because I already forgot. But he's very well known for maybe his most famous game, Cartographers, which is the reason we are making this episode, and we will tell a little bit of a story later. But first of all, we want to say welcome, Jordi. Thank you for coming to the show. I hope you feel welcome. And we want to say thank you, of course, to our partners. So thank you very much, Javi from Partida de Locos, for uploading these episodes to YouTube, and also to our university radio that hosts us every single week. So I think we are ready to start, Mati.
Okay, first the announcements. We are running the Design Week or Semana de Diseño, como lo conocen ustedes, where we make one game per day in a week. I always mess this up because I say a game a week and it's not a game a week, 7 days, seven games a week. You're not late if you're hearing this. If you're hearing this, yes, this is the last day because this episode will air tomorrow. But we can you can join and make the games with the themes that already been announced. So yeah, join the Discord and you can like participate for free. It's not a requirement for anything. And what have you been playing, people?
Maybe Jordi can start. What have you been playing these last few days?
So this last days I was in São Paulo, and and there's a gigantic board game community. So yeah, this weekend I've played a lot of things. One of my favorite games that I've played was a trick-taking game called Hifu. There's a friend of mine, he's a trick-taking game collector. He's has almost 300 trick-taking games in his collection right now.
No way.
And, yeah. That's a lot. So yeah, Hifu is a trick-taking game where you want to take exactly two tricks. And depending on if you are the first player to get two tricks, then you're going to get like a few points. If you are the second player to get that, then you get a couple more points and so on. So you want to be the last player to get exactly two tricks. If you get the third trick, then you're out of the round and the other people keep playing it. It's pretty simple, but I think this mechanism was quite nice. And it was the... We actually played three trick-taking games with this mechanism. We played also Savage Bowl. That's also, it's a bit more complex game, but using the same idea. And the other one, I cannot remember the name right now. One other nice game that I played was 12 Chip Trick.
Yep.
So the whole game is 12 chips and a few coasters to mark your points. But the idea is that you want to take chips in front of you that the sum of it of them doesn't exceed 21, so kind of like blackjack. And it's pretty simple. It's I found it that it was just amazing making like a game with many. It feels like very strategic, and there's only 12 chips in the game, so that was quite nice.
Cool. You've been playing a lot of Japanese games. Like all of these, I think they are from Japanese designers, right?
Yeah. But that's because of this friend of mine.
Yeah, trick-taking is super popular in Japan. It's like I don't know if you call it a trend, but it's like a design philosophy. Many trick-takers, and usually they are super cool. Honestly, I've been very excited recently about trick-taking games, and I feel that every designer around the world is nowadays trying to come up with a trick-taking game. A few years ago, many people were doing like roll and rides and stuff like that. Now I think the trend is moving into trick-takers, which is good. I love it.
Yeah, I like them a lot as well. It's so easy taking explaining a card game to anyone. Like you can play with family, you can play with people that don't play board games because I don't know. It's just cards with numbers. It's so yeah. Simple.
And you mentioned 12 chip tricks. How do you say it? How that's the name?
Twelve chip trick.
Ah, that now is being published by Mandu Games in Korea, and they are scouting for like some people and some great designers around the world. They are like very prolific. They've been publishing a lot of games from different people. And I can really see a collaboration between you, Jordi, and Mandu Games. So I don't know if they already contacted you, but I can see one of your games being published by them.
I've made a trick-taking game that was recently released here in Brazil.
Let's see.
Called Fibonacci's.
Fibonacci's, yeah,
so,
we saw that on
GG.
Yeah, It's a game that mixes trick-taking with the Fibonacci sequence and nachos. So nachos is just the theme of the game. But the Fibonacci sequence is all around in the game. Like you want to take... When you take a trick, you take a card from the center of the board that has a couple of points, or a few points on the card, a few fire icons. And at the end of the round, you want to have fire icons exactly like in the same numbers of the Fibonacci sequence. Because if you manage to do so, then you gain points equal to the next number in the Fibonacci sequence. The trump system in the game is that there are three suits and cards in the Fibonacci sequence. They have a different color in them. And they are trump cards, but they are only activated if two Fibonacci numbers were played in the trick. So it's a cute game. It was recently
super nice.
Yeah, the Japanese version of it was recently announced as well. The nice. Art is going to be a little different, and yeah, trick taking games.
That's nice. Is it been who's gonna be the artist from Japan? Is it Saibepu
I'm not sure.
Because recently, Sai Beppo, who is like one of the most prolific, I would say, artists from Japan, she has been designing a lot of very popular games like Nana and others. That I think 12 Cheap Tricks. I think she was the artist as well. And she recently started following us on our Instagram, and we were like so surprised. It's like, oh, how do you know us?
Oh, that's nice. And so she did 12 Chip Trick?
I think so. I think she's the artist, but I might be wrong. Sai Beppo. Yeah?
Okay.
Nice. This week, I've been playing another trick-taking game, which is The Crew, Mission Deep Sea. Super fun game. It's been around since 2019, 2020. But I've never played it before. And I never played it before because I thought it was going to be complicated. I thought it was going to be like a campaign game that is what it was going to be difficult, and completely the opposite. It's super easy. It's super fun. It's addictive as hell. And I fully recommend it. What about you, Mati? What have you played this week?
It's going to sound fake, but I've been playing Cartographers, really. Because we knew we were going to make this chapter, and I was with my girlfriend, and she said, like, oh, what's Cartographers? It's like, have I never show you Cartographers? Like, really? And I don't know. We played a lot of Cartographers. I bought the papers because I didn't have any. So we played a lot. And she liked it. She really, really liked it. But it's funny that you say The Crew, meaning that we have already The Crew mentioned in another question. And we can use this to start with some questions. I'm going to mix this up. I'm going to mix the ordering you you diagrammed here and start here. Because The Crew is a game we know you know it, because it was also nominated in the Spiel des Jahres when you were nominated. The first thing I want to say is that I didn't know Cartographers was a game made from someone from Latin America, from Brazil specifically. Usually see these games like, okay, it's probably someone European. And it was so fun and so good to see someone from a neighbor did an amazing game. So first, congratulations for the game. And then...
Thank you. Thank you very much.
The question we make to all the Spiel des Jahres nominees, how does it feel? How do you feel all the events? Like, is it something... were you nervous? Were you excited? Were you a mix?
I think it was a mix. Because another event that was happening when Cartographers was nominated was the pandemic.
Yes.
So everything was weird at that time. But I wasn't expecting it to be nominated. And I remember it very clearly that I got a call at, it was like 6 a.m. here. And it was a friend of mine he called to tell me that the game was nominated, and that was amazing. It was like one of the best moments of my life, just seeing that and seeing all the love of people. Like, people started talking about the game a lot, and just hearing this was very good. And then I started waiting because I at that moment I had already played The Crew. And I was saying that The Crew was going to be nominated and was going to win the Spiel des Jahres. So going against the game was I really think The Crew is one of my favorite games. And it was hard cheering for my game, knowing that it was going against a game that is so wonderful.
Yeah, so just the idea of being nominated is amazing. It's like a dream come true for most board game designers. not everyone has the opportunity to be nominated, right? And I think you are the first Brazilian who was nominated. Were you also the first Latin American to be nominated?
Yeah, I know I'm the first Brazilian, but I'm not sure about Latin America.
We should make a research onto this, but let's say for now that you are the first one. So when you found out that the crew lost, that the crew won, did you feel weird or were you okay with it? How was the feeling knowing that even though you got nominated, you didn't win at the end?
I was expecting that. Of course, I was hoping that something happened and Cartographers won, but I was kind of expecting. So it was okay. It was okay. And just being nominated is just so amazing. I like reaching publishers and showing them my prototypes after that is just so much easier than before. So I think that is already something very good.
Definitely, definitely. So now let's start talking about the man of the hour, which is Cartographers, because it's an amazing game. Honestly, it's one of the first games that we play together, and also one of the games that pull us into the hobby as say like, hey, look, there are other games rather than Monopoly and Risk. In Argentina, we play Teg, which is very similar to Risk. And Cartographers showed us that there are other games that are actually more fun and more interesting. Can you tell us a little bit more of how the idea came?
So I was making some... Yeah, I think it all started when... I was trying to make some board games. I was at the moment studying game design, but it was like digital game design. Yeah. But I had a class or a test that we were supposed to do a board game. So, and I was already playing some board games. And when I made the board game, I realized how easier it was making a prototype and seeing people play that, how easier it was making a board game than a video game or a digital game. And something like tickled in my mind and I started, okay, so let's try making some more board games now. And I wasn't living where I am right now. I was living in Curitiba. And there I found a game designer community that a few people that were also making some games, and we met every week so we could play prototypes from each other. So I started making some games, but I realized it was also difficult. Like the first few games I made was they weren't really that good, and at some moment, I played a Roll and Write, my first Roll and Write. It was it was called I think it's Dinosaur. Wow, I can't remember. Dinosaur World or
Dinosaur.
And it was a print and play prototype at that moment, print and play game. So I printed it. I showed it through to a friend of mine. Or actually, it was the friend of mine that showed it to me. And I played that, and again, something tickled, and oh, so making it seemed it's much easier making a roll and write than making other types of game. Like it's just making everything in a paper, I can print it at home. And if I use only cards, then it's even easier because I can make everything really quickly and iterate really quickly. So I started making some roll and writes. At the beginning, I was finding mechanics that I found fun in other games and then trying to translate that to roll and writes. So I made a few games like that. And some games that I really like right now, but I liked at the moment were Patchwork and Eye of Sky. And I really thought, okay, how can I make a game that mixes all of this? And the first version of Cartographers wasn't about mapping. It was about managing an inventory, a backpack.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I started playing that with my friends. And it was one thing that was really difficult was drawing the items that you were putting in the backpack. So making a square shape and then drawing a shield inside of it, and then making an L shape and drawing a boot. So the drawings were complex, and some people don't like drawing. So I thought, okay, how can I make the drawing more simple? And I started doodling some shapes. And the shapes from Cartographers eventually appeared. And I thought, okay, so maybe this game is about making a kingdom instead of managing the backpack. And then it started changing the direction a little bit. I think that's how it all started.
Great start.
Yeah. I love how easy or like how open-minded you were of changing the theme of the game. Sometimes we designers, we are stuck with a theme and it's very hard to like change it. But in your case, the decision, even maybe it wasn't easy because maybe you were a little bit in love with the previous topic, with the previous theme, but you saw that making maps and being a cartographer made a lot more sense at the end.
Yeah. I think as a designer, you always have some like objectives of type of games you want to make, and these objectives may sometimes is like the theme of the game, sometimes it's the mechanics. And like if you started the game because you wanted to make something with a specific mechanic, I think it's really easy to changing the theme because the goal is making something with that mechanic. But I can see sometimes being difficult if there's a theme that you love a lot and you want to make a game about that theme. Maybe during the process of making the game, you find a cool mechanism. But getting rid of that theme that was like the spark of starting that project sometimes is very difficult.
We already spoke in this radio podcast. I usually don't know how to call it, about this like this change between video games and board games. I come from video games as well. I used to work. I worked like 6 years in a few places making video games, and now I'm making board games. And it's completely true what you say. It's like really, really, really easier to see the game and play the game rather than test it out in a computer. And I feel like it's much of a social experience. Like you gather with some friends and say, hey, I got a prototype. And it's much easier to get some honest feedback rather than a video game. If you make a video game quickly, it's usually ugly and buggy. So people will think, hey, this is broken. This is not working. But if you make something on the table, it's more like physical. They have contact with the game, so they can feel where it can improve rather than where it fails.
Yeah, and even in video games, I know that many people start like the first prototype of a video game is actually a board game version of it.
Yeah.
So they try to simulate the video game in cards and paper format just because it's much simpler.
Yeah. So I feel that we will be talking with you, Jordi, for ages. We have so many questions and everything is very interesting, but we will do in a small commercial pause and we will come back with more The Cards Over the Table.
Estás escuchando Las Cartas Sobre la Mesa. Un programa para un número ilimitado de jugadores, de 0 a 99 años.
And welcome back to The Cards Over the Table with Jordi Adam. And Jordi, I want to start this section asking you something that I really don't know, which is you first released Cartographers, right? But then you released Cartographers Heroes. That is like, it's not an expansion, it's like a sequel, plays kind of like the same, but the goals are different, and you also made this mechanic with the heroes that are killing the monsters. Why did you make a very similar game to Cartographers? And do you feel that Cartographers Heroes is more enjoyable than the first Cartographers?
Yeah, when I was reached by the publisher to make an expansion for the game, yeah, I really feel that the game is so simple and the components are so, like, you have so few components. That it would be a nice idea just making a standalone game with different objectives and maybe a little twist on something, and you could mix and match the two games. I really like when games do that. So yeah, that's why it started like this. And I can't really tell. I like the base game because I really like the ruins and what they do to the, like, to the strategic elements of the game. It's nice sometimes having this restriction of where you're going to place the shape. But I also really like the heroes, so I really can't tell which one is my favorite. And I think another thing that's nice about the heroes expansions is that monsters have special effects when they come up, and in the base game they don't. So it's kind of like a trade-off. The heroes is a bit more complex, but maybe it's a bit more fun when a monster comes up and it has a special effect that is more thematic than just the different shapes that monsters have in the first game. But the first game is really much simpler and much easier to play with anyone.
Hmm. One thing that we didn't know about the game, about the base Cartographers, I think it happens again in Heroes, is something that I know if it's lost in translation in the Spanish version or something, about the order of the cards, the objective cards. Like, we usually put it in the A, B, C, D, and we put like trees objectives, fields and rivers objectives, house objectives, like villages, and last, the last type of objective, I don't know how to call it. Is it always that setting, or you can mix up the objectives?
Yeah, it's mixed up. You shuffle the ones that you found, you draw, and then you place in random positions.
It's amazing. Oh, that I played the game, like, I don't know, 100 times. I think 100 times. Yeah. And I 80 times, I made it like that exact formula, like trees first, then rivers and fields, then the houses, and then the rest. True. And we were reading the manual the other day, and I found out, hey, it doesn't say that we need that specifically. So it was really, really weird. Re-knowing the game is really different that way.
It's nice having the pattern objective being the last one, because then sometimes when like the forest objective is the last one, the other types of terrain they stop mattering, is that a word?
I like mattering.
Let's say it is. Yeah.
But it's nice having the shape object, the pattern objective being the last one, because then every shape that comes up, it matters for the placement of it. So yeah, it's the rule says that you place them in random positions, but when I'm showing the game to someone, I I usually place the pattern objective as the last one because of that.
I got to the same conclusion, like the other day, like I set it up randomly. And I said, but it's better if this one goes last, because you get to build something that makes you points. Because if it's the first objective, you don't see it until the first or the end of the game. But yeah, I had this question in my mind. I would really wanted to ask him, to ask someone that really knows the game a little bit.
And Jordi, oh, sorry.
No, no, tell me, tell me.
Something?
Oh. No, no, no.
So you made a ton of expansions for this game, especially for Cartographer's Heroes. There are like 6 full expansions and a lot of mini expansions. To be honest, I only played, I don't remember the name, but the one that you can buy like skills. It's like skill trading or something.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's the skills mini expansion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and mm-hmm. It's very cool. All the ideas that I've seen, they look very nice, all the different maps. But I wanted to ask you, how do you feel about homemade expansions? About people drawing their own cards or their own maps, not pirating the game, but creating something to add on the game and releasing that on the internet. Some publisher houses and some designers are not very okay with it. How do you feel about people kind of like cosplaying your game?
Yeah, I like them. I like them very much. I think it's something that I do as well when I like a game a lot. Sometimes I think, okay, maybe I can try making some new mechanism for it, or adding a different card. Sometimes games even comes with like blank cards that you can create your own ideas. I think they are pretty nice. Yeah, I think for the publisher and the designer side, it's a bit difficult, like talking about them specifically, because like for cartographers, there are so many people creating things for it, and maybe a new cartographer's game comes up in the future with an idea from that was someone created before. So it's difficult for designers to talking about it, or talking specifically about the mechanics, or reposting like, okay, this mechanism, this idea, this homemade idea is really nice. Because if a new game comes out later and uses that idea, it should be credited. So I feel like as a designer, I enjoy it. But I should keep it like I should keep it inside. I should keep silent about it.
Yeah. No, I understand. It's not easy. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think that's situation. It's one of like the magical parts of board games, because it's easier for us to make prototypes and make games, because it's just paper and physical components. And it's also really, really easy for people that like a game a lot to make their own expansions for that game. So I think that's a magical part of playing board games and liking them.
Yeah. And I have another personal question. This is an in-depth question. Are you ready?
Okay. Yeah.
How many blueberries can you fit in your mouth? No, that's not the question. The question is, Cartographers is such a great game and it's such a recommended game all the time that sometimes your other games fall under the shadow of Cartographers. How do you feel about that? And do you feel that you can make a better game, or do you feel that you have made better games in your opinion than Cartographers?
It's something I think about a lot. I feel that I always have one of my prototype that is like the best game that I've ever made. And many times when the game comes out, I think it's difficult reaching the same popularity as Cartographers. So it can feel a bit frustrating at sometimes.
It's like a blessing and a curse at the same time.
At the same time, yes. But I really feel it's like a part of the job. It's I think it's making a great game. It's a mix of like timing of when the game comes out and really the ideas behind it, and there is a bit of luck involved as well, like getting the initial traction for the game and getting like the people playing it at the beginning before it is famous. So yeah, I think it's a part of the job. I think maybe someday a game greater than Cartographers comes up, but yeah, I really hope that this is the case.
Yeah, we have hope that it will happen. Thank you so much for opening up and being honest. It's nice.
Yeah, that's okay.
And on a lighter side of the interview, we noticed something in your BGG account, in your board game geek account. I want to say it like really bluntly, and I expect you not to take it like harsh. You give really weird score points in some board games. For the first example, I want to say that Catan has a 6.501.
It's a very specific scoring.
Yeah, I have many friends on BGG, and we sometimes share our ratings for other games or for games that we just played, and it's a bit to provoke my friends.
Nice.
Because very well, yeah, done. Because they see it and they, why do you do that? What it means, the game being like 0.001 better than that other game. So yeah,
I love it. So we're gonna play a little game where we are gonna tell you a game that you rated, and you have to remember the rating that you gave it to this game. So don't open up BGG at the moment. Have to play by memory. Okay, we are gonna tell you four games. The first one, Carcassonne. Do you remember what scoring did you give it?
Oh, Carcassonne, yeah. That was one of the first games I've played and that I had in my collection. But I got, as I started playing more games and more, I started finding which type of games I like more. I eventually got rid of my copy of Carcassonne, but I had the big box version of it with like five expansions.
Yeah,
and I don't think I came back and updated my rating for that. So I think it should be a nice rating. I would say like 8.573.
Well, you were very close. It was like a sharp eight.
Okay.
It's a sharp eight. I usually say it's my favorite game, because it's like so chill. I can just sit back and relax and play a two-player game of Cartographers. Yeah, also Cartographers, but Carcassonne specifically. I recently bought the cooperative game, the cooperative Carcassonne game.
I have it like right here. Like Mist Over Carcassonne, right?
Mist Over Carcassonne.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Focus. I liked it a lot.
Nice. I didn't. Okay. But yeah. It's a really good game.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's really Carcassonne. It's all the expansions that I've played were really nice. Even the there's like a collection of mini box, like really mini boxes expansions, and I think it's so easy creating new, like there's so much space to create new ideas in Carcassonne that I think it's amazing.
Yeah. Let's go with the next game, and this rating hurts me because it's one of my favorite games. I gave this game a 10. Okay. This is Coloretto.
Coloretto, okay.
You remember this game?
I remember, yes. Yeah, it took me a while to play Coloretto, but I can't remember why I gave it a low rating. So, because I think it's nice. I think the mechanism The idea is very nice. There are many games that came after Coloretto that builds upon this idea. So if it hurts you, I would say I gave it 6.2.
Very close. Sharp six this time.
Sharp six?
Okay. Yeah. Where do you feel like, you know, in our minds, we have like a number where we say like below this number, we will consider it a not so good game. And over this number is like a good game. What's your middle point?
Yeah, I think it's giving a rating lower than six. It's a game that I didn't enjoy that much. But for a good game, a really good game, probably anything above eight or eight or above, okay. It's a game that I like a lot.
Yep. Okay, last one. Love Letter. Amazing game, Japanese design. A few cards, 16 cards, I believe. Amazing game, really easy to teach. Do you remember which rating did you give it?
Mm-hmm. Love Letter. Yeah, that one was one of my first games as well. I remember playing it a lot, many, many times. I still have it, have that copy, but the box of the game, like, disintegrated.
Yeah.
So I keep the cards in a Ziploc. I would say I gave it 7.1.
Very close. 7.81. Another very specific rating.
I think it stands with that rating.
I really love this rating system. I think I'm gonna use it. And we have like two last questions. No, not much anymore. One is the one we anticipated, so we leave it. Let's make it now. How do you feel today? Like a potato or a crocodile?
Okay, so yeah, today
is the most
important
question of the show. The most important question.
Yeah, I've been overthinking it since you told me he was going to come. But I didn't think of an answer, so I'm just gonna think. Yeah, I think it's a very hot day here in Brazil today. So I'm feeling like a potato that is about to get fried.
Very nice. Okay.
But that, yeah, maybe a little bit crocodile as well, because I wanted to be in a pool.
I like it. So Jordi, thank you so much for coming to the show. We're gonna go to the last question. It's a very open question, but thank you so much for coming. Thank you so much for enjoying this time with us. And the last question is, how do you feel about the future in terms of like you as a game designer? What will come in the near future? Like you mentioned Fibonacci's, any mechanics that you want to innovate with? Any places that you want to be, any communities that you want to reach? What do you see in your future as a game designer?
I'll start talking about some games. So I think maybe one of the biggest projects that I've ever worked was just announced. The game is called Ozob. So
whoa.
Yeah, it's based on a Brazilian IP that they released a book in that IP.
Nice.
And yeah, so Ozob is a dungeon crawler game, cooperative, and it's the setting is like a cyberpunk future. And yeah, I've been working on this game for like 18 months now. And this weekend it was announced, so I got to finally tell people that was working on it. So it was quite nice. The game is supposed to be released next year,
okay.
And not only in Brazil but like an international release. So I'm really very excited for this game. So maybe if people like my work, they can see what is done in a, because it was the first time that I made a dungeon crawler game. And it's a very different type of game to make. This game is I also co-designed it with a friend of mine called Renato Simões. And it was also his first dungeon crawler. And we usually play more hero type games, more party games, and bringing all the ideas that we had for the other types of games we designed before. It was very nice, like joining everything together and also learning how to make a dungeon crawler. And I think that's really think something that is going to stick for the future. Like now in the future, when I make a more strategic hero game, I have some ideas about what's good about a dungeon crawler and how the luck factor plays a big fun and important role in that. So Ozob is a game that's coming up. I have Stone Spine Architects as well. That is a game that from the same publisher as Cartographers that was on Kickstarter this year, and it's getting released next year. So that game is about building a dungeon, and it's a card drafting game where you are first drafting for you're building your dungeon in rows, and the top side of the card is the room of the dungeon, and the bottom part is there's some coins in the bottom part. So first you draft the cards, and then you're going to count how many coins you gathered, and these coins you're going to use in a market phase. So the cards have like multi-use. So I'm really excited about these two games.
They sound very fun.
Yeah, they are very, very different. But I think they all have they all started with an idea, and I had to like make them around this idea, which is very nice. And yeah, one place that I really wanted to be is, since we were talking about trick-taking games, I think the Tokyo Game Show sounds like a really, really fun place to visit. So I hope I can go there in the future.
I can see you there. I can see you there. That would be amazing.
So yeah, thank you a lot for coming. And now to finish up the radio show, I'll make it in Spanish, make it maybe, because el juego de la semana, the game of the week, is Cartographers, of course. Fucking course, we've been talking about it. This episode is called Dear Cartographers, because it's like a series of games we really, really love. The letter of the week is the letter A, letra A. De a veces nos equivocamos y está bien. No tendríamos que ver la vida como una única oportunidad de hacer las cosas perfectamente. Por eso deberíamos jugar un cartógrafo, que siempre es una buena idea.
Excellent. Amazing. So, Jordi, thank you so much again. Any other things that you want to say before we close?
Yeah, so yo voy a tentar hablar un poquito de español. Mas muito obrigado pelo convite. Oh, yeah, I think I'm just speaking Portuguese. I'm not sure if that's Spanish anymore.
Perfect. We like Portuguese. We want to hear your Portuguese. Say something to the people in Portuguese. They love it.
Muito obrigado pelo convite e por essa conversa aqui. Eu sempre acho muito divertido falar sobre jogos, falar sobre meus jogos. E é muito legal compartilhar essas coisas com pessoas que dá para sentir que amam jogos da mesma maneira que eu amo. Então, muito obrigado pelo convite de estar aqui.
Thank you a lot. And yes, I definitely understood that, because we usually don't think about it, but there's something like we can understand each other when talking in, when we want to understand each other, we can do it. And it's really nice that a great game like Cartographers were made like here, near us. And we want to thank you for this interview. We want to thank you for your time. And yeah, I think that's basically it, the program for today. Mayo,
Yeah.
¿algo más?
Nothing else to say. Thank you very much, Mati. And see you again in the next episode of Las Cartas Over the Table. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Si el azar y la estrategia lo permiten, nos reencontramos el próximo miércoles a las 16 por AM 1240, Radio Universidad.